Good afternoon, everyone. We are gathered today for the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is June 2nd. We have two items on our agenda, a work session on the Department of Veterans Affairs and a public hearing on House Bill 2840. And in deference to Representative Evans, who is here, what I'd like to do is briefly open up the public hearing and hear from him, and then we'll close that and move into the work session and then come back to the hearing. Is that workable for everybody? So I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on 2840. Ms. Deister?
Okay. House Bill 2840 comes to you from the House Committee on Veterans Affairs and Emergency Preparedness. It was voted out of that committee on April 7th and had a subsequent referral here. A fiscal impact, an indeterminate fiscal impact statement has been issued on the bill, and you should be able to find the staff measure summary in OLIS. Basically, it establishes a bridge loan program, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is named as the administrator of that program in the bill.
All right, thank you so much. Representative Evans, welcome to the committee. We have a letter from you, but we'd be pleased to hear from you at this point on the bill.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Senator Johnson. For the record, I'm Paul Evans, House District 20. I'm going to be as brief as I can. I understand that there's a work session coming that everybody wants to focus on. I'm also hoping that the less I talk, the more likely the bill is to pass. So I'll go with that view.
Smart man.
I brought two books just to emphasize why I'm here talking about the GI Bill. And in many people's minds, because of the way in which veteran services are funded in the United States, people generally think that most veterans programming, most veterans concerns are taken care of by the federal government. That's the theory. Unfortunately, that isn't really the reality in many cases. In 2007, we were all celebrating the newest and best update to the 1944 GI Bill, which provided folks that were veterans of the military, provided them an opportunity to go to trade school, go to school, get ready for the workforce. And it was all the trimmings that went with the original 1944 bill. 2010 came, Congress reduced those benefits. One of the unanticipated consequences of the 2010 reductions was the takeaway of what had been a break, the ability to go to school, and if there were summer breaks or winter breaks or there weren't classes, you would still be paid through that process to completion. That no longer exists. Why is that relevant to us? It's relevant to us because we're seeing a significant rise in folks that have the GI Bill, have earned the GI Bill, are going to institutions, but not finishing because they have to quit to pay off the bills because these breaks pop up and the costs of tuition and books and fees and everything else have been a problem. So I'm here today to do two things. Number one, to try to sell you on 2840 in budgetarily constrained times, which I know we're better off than we were 2 years ago, but we're not as good off as we hopefully will be in 2 years from now. This targets folks that are currently enrolled in the GI Bill. They're enrolled in some type of training. They're on a path to completion, but they have that situation where they need little assistance. In that case, they can go to EVA, basically get a bridge to the other side when their checks will come back in again, and they can finish and complete and go into the workforce with their degrees. ODVA since 1945 has had an educational assistance fund. I understand that requirements this year suggest that most of that money be rolled into something else. That fund is entirely different than this targeted approach. That fund had a $150 a month maximum that could be paid. This is basically to pay what the service person would be getting the 2 or 3 months of the bridge at the rate that they were being paid for by the GI Bill, and a one-time shot. That's kind of the goal. It's designed specifically for completion. At another time, hopefully we'll be before your committee or future committees advocating for even more funds for more veteran services. But I believe this is the most important thing we can do in terms of an add-on service for veterans in this legislature. Connected to the Women Veterans Coordinating position that I understand is in the mix and the other investments being made, I think this will actually have the best return on our dollars. I think it is an appropriate use of the services. I will close with the discussion about this particular book and why I mentioned it. For those of you not familiar with the Bonus Army, for those of you not familiar with what can happen when a government fights a war and then forgets, Walter Waters, who was from Oregon, led the bonus expeditionary force back to D.C. to try to get the bonuses they'd been promised by the Congress when they couldn't pay their bills either. And unfortunately, that was a five-year struggle that eventually sort of kind of got people to where they needed to be. And the 1944 Services Readjustment Act was, in fact, the answer to make sure we never make that mistake again. Here we are. I'm asking that Oregon help supplement what the federal government haven't been able to get done. I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Yes, Senator.
A couple of statements first. Thank you for your service.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think that it goes without saying that all of us, especially those of us who have not been in the services, are deeply respectful and eager to do whatever we can to help veterans.
Yes, ma'am.
Second statement, I think it is shameful that this nation makes people that have worn the uniform of our country beg for benefits that they have been promised and they have earned.
Yes, ma'am.
Against that backdrop, I want to ask about the indeterminate fiscal. I am trying to figure out how this would work. Money is advanced to veterans. It is spent in anticipation of them getting their federal benefit. But I understand that the default rate among student loans is breathtakingly high. And I'm wondering why an indeterminate fiscal when we can't figure out what it's going to take to go out and police up all of these loans. We're already owed $3 billion in money that we can't find now. It seems to me that as laudable as this program is, that it has the very real potential to exacerbate that problem. And what happens if a vet defaults? How awkward is that going to be? I mean, I see this as having some unintended consequences, as good a concept as I believe it is.
Co-chairs Gomberg and Johnson, the two things to that. One is we are looking for a potential amendment that would allow ODVA to make it a grant rather than a loan. So that if, and what I would hope that that would be tied to is completion. So that if they actually complete the program, much like the education aid has been since 1945, a grant as opposed to a loan, this could be turned into a grant if they met certain conditions. The other piece is we were hoping for $300,000. If it's less than that, we'll take what we can have, and the money will be used until it can't be like everything else. But it would help those veterans that actually get the money when they need it.
Follow up.
Please.
I think you exacerbate your problem. It turns into a grant if they complete, but if it doesn't complete, then you're back out chasing some veteran who owes the state money.
I would suspect that ODVA would hopefully focus on the 0% loan so that they have the ability to pay it back when they can. I want ODVA to have as much flexibility as possible. If I could make the rules the way that I would like them, there'd be all grants with the expectation that the veterans that are going through the process and applying to get the money have a plan in place to graduate. But
okay. Other questions? Yes, Senator.
The bonus march.
Yep.
It was an interesting time. I think it was 1931. The fact that Hoover allowed the attack on his bonus marchers probably cost him re-election.
Yes, sir.
Or contributed to his and it, hopefully we learned something from that, because the GI Bill in 44 was monumentally successful. My father was a college professor during that time, and he said the best students he ever had were the boys coming back from World War II. They were serious. They really wanted to get on with their lives. They studied. And it was a successful time. I would hope that we could emulate that and treat the boys that come back from Iraq and Afghanistan and from, well, Vietnam, it's over. That was my era. But treat them with that kind of respect. So I'll be doing all I can to help you with this effort, Representative. I appreciate your efforts.
Thank
boys
you.
Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, boys and girls today, right? You're right.
Representative, thank you so much for bringing this to us, and thank you again for your service and your commitment to your fellow vets.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go ahead and close for the moment the public hearing on 2840, and I'm going to open a work session on 5539. Ms. Dyster.
Okay, Senate Bill 5539 is the budget bill for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a total funds budget of $412,288,678 and 86 positions, 85.50 FTE. I guess the easiest thing would be they don't have that many policy option packages, so perhaps we can go through. But in terms of some highlights, the LFO recommendation includes approval of a limited duration training and development specialist position to assist in addressing the large number of county veteran service officers requiring accreditation and continuing education. A permanent enhancement to the County Veteran Service Officer Program, which is funded with a combination of additional general fund and through the repurposing of existing special payments for educational assistance and emergency assistance. The LFO recommendation also includes funding for the Veteran Suicide Prevention Hotline that you heard testimony about. There is an accompanying budget note to that. And federal funds expenditure limitation in the amount of $1, and that will facilitate any receipt of grants that ODVA might get in the future in the interim. That way the emergency board can go ahead and increase that $1 expenditure limitation to accommodate any grants that they might receive. For example, there's a rural transportation grant program that may be reauthorized in the interim once you all adjourn, and in order for them to apply and then disperse those funds, they would need that federal funds expenditure limitation sort of placeholder, if you will. There are the LFO recommendation includes some reclassifications of existing positions so that those can be utilized to the department's best advantage in keeping with their strategic planning effort that occurred over the interim. And expenditure limitation to support a new permanent director of aging veteran services, as well as a debt service adjustment for bonds that are not anticipated to be issued in 15-17 related to a third veteran's home that doesn't appear that those bonds would be issued by the end of the 15-17 biennium in any event at this point during this planning horizon that we can currently foresee. So with that, the work session presentation report details those recommendations in more detail. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation for the loan program totals $15,477,065 other funds, 51 positions, and 51.10 FTE. It includes package 105, which adds one FTE for the loan program to meet the anticipated loan activity in that program. Now that the economy is recovering, they are seeing more interest in that program, and they need an additional position to help underwrite those loans, evaluate them, and move those through the process. So that package amounts to $148,346 other funds and one FTE. That's anticipated to be permanent. Package 106 provides $250,000 other funds to allow for updated software for the home loan program. It's anticipated to be off the shelf that can be customized. The current IT systems for the loan program are pretty antiquated and will shortly be unsupportable. So that is package 106 that LFO also recommends in that program. Moving on to the Veteran Services Program, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending general fund in the amount of $9,078,408, other funds in the amount of $873,803, federal funds in the amount of $1, and 30 positions, 29.40 FTE. Package 101 includes reclassifications in the amount of $63,623 in personal services to properly reclassify positions to the jobs that they are actually doing in the department pursuant to the agency's strategic plan. It also includes funding for a half-time training and development specialist two and attendant services and supplies. That position was established at a May 2014 meeting of the emergency board, and it was in response to a high number of county veteran service officer positions that had turned over since 2013. You may remember testimony with regard to the intensive training that these folks require, as well as the need for ongoing regular training for existing long-term county veteran service officers who are already accredited. Package 102 is county funds, technical aid, and veterans outreach. Package 102 is recommended by LFO. During the 2013 regular legislative session, there was $1 million in one-time funding that was approved for the Veterans Extended Outreach Grant Program. That, because it was one-time, comes out of the current service level. And the thought here is to increase ongoing support for the County Veterans Service Officer Program by a total of $500,000 over the 15-17 current service level. And the mechanism by which LFO proposes to do this is to repurpose the current amount that is currently going to educational aid, and the balance in that program, the current service level is $88,983. And utilizing also a portion of the current service level amount allocated to the emergency assistance program. And that would leave a balance in that program of $150,000, as well as a general fund investment of $246,046. So as you look on the presentation report, you will see that the new dollars going to that are the $246,046, but the proposal here is also to repurpose some existing funds to get that county veteran service amount distributed to the counties up by $500,000 over the current service level.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
sir. And then that goes into the base budget.
Madam Chair, that is anticipated to be a permanent change.
Thank you.
Package 801 in the Veterans Services Program provides $350,000 in one-time general fund support for that Veterans Crisis and Suicide Prevention Hotline. There is an accompanying budget note that speaks to ODVA coordinating with the Oregon Health Authority so that there's only one procurement for that sort of service, so that we don't have two contracts going out for basically the same thing, one in the Oregon Health Authority and one in ODVA. It also has the $1 in federal funds expenditure limitation for the federal grants also in this package, because that's was just the convenient place for me to put it. So, okay. So that that's basically the synopsis of the Veterans Services Program.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, if at the point you're ready to take motions, are you ready?
I've got one more program to go through.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. The Oregon Veterans Home Program, the LFO recommendation is for $2,618,940 general fund, $65,906,751 other funds, five positions, and 5.00 FTE. These are the two that these basically are the two veterans homes that ODVA operates, one in the Dalles and then the one in Lebanon. Package 107 is a reclassification of existing positions that are at each of the veterans homes, totaling $9,050 in other funds. These folks are the representative liaison between the facility's on-site contractor and ODVA. and it appropriately reflects their supervising duties with respect to an administrative service professional that also works with them at the facility. Package 802 is the Aging Veterans Services Director. I believe you heard testimony with regard to that. That was the position that was established by ODVA in the interim. This is basically the link between the ODVA management and basically a person who is going to be coordinating efforts between ODVA and other state and local partners for best practices, expertise, and preventative strategies for aging veterans throughout the state. The package is assumed to be a permanent position and totals $220,000 other funds and 1.00 FTE. Package 811 is the updated debt service adjustment. We take out $2,093,963 in lottery funds that were originally budgeted for debt service associated with a third veteran's home that is not yet approved, planned, or built. And then non-limited funds. The Legislative Fiscal Office had no package adjustments associated with that. The Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending $318,333,710 other funds non-limited for ODVA. And that is... That's basically the recommendation.
Question? Yes, Representative Winston.
So could you go over the allocation for the veterans home that is neither built nor planned?
Okay. Madam Chair, currently, co-chairs and Representative Whitsitt, I just promoted you. Currently, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs has authorization to build a third veterans home in statute. Considering that the second veterans home has just been built and it's not completely up to capacity at this point, there aren't plans to get started on a third veterans home until that facility is completely reached its capacity and can pencil out, and also until capital construction dollars are appropriated for it by this body. There's also a federal grant funding process that they would need to go through with the federal department, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, to get federal funds associated with that. So it's quite a process. It takes several years.
So I guess I'm after, why are we talking about it exactly?
Co-chairs and Representative Whitsitt, because debt service was budgeted for it in the current service level, just as a mechanism of what was anticipated the last biennium that rolled into the current service level. This is more of a reflection of reality about the fact that it's not going to happen in 15-17, so we would take that out.
So are we going to put that money somewhere else, or what's going to happen to that money? Is it just sort of disappear then?
Co-chairs, Representative Whitsitt, that would be lottery bonds that would have been dedicated to the debt service on those bonds. So theoretically, hopefully, Tamara will correct me if I'm wrong, from the CFO's office, that could potentially free up lottery bond capacity if those bonds aren't issued. Perhaps not. Okay.
Close. Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gumberg, Representative Whitsitt, in the 2013-15 capital...
I just need to back up for a sec.
Tamara Brickman from the Chief Financial Office
of
Department of Administrative Services. Sorry about that. In the 2013-15 capital construction budget and lottery bond bill, there was authorization to issue a certain amount of bonds to start building in this biennium a third veterans home. Because the project was not quite ready, because it doesn't have federal approval or the federal dollars to move forward, and because they just completed the second home, a decision was made not to sell the bonds in this biennium. And so when you have a bond bill in a previous biennium that authorizes a number of bond sales, we figure in what the debt service is going to be into the future biennium. And because we are not selling those bonds in this biennium, there will be no debt service associated with those bonds. And the debt service is a direct lottery dollar allocation. It's lottery dollars, not bonds, that pay off the debt service for lottery. So if we sell lottery bonds, we use lottery funds to pay off the debt associated with lottery bonds. Debt issuance. And so essentially that $2 million, when we're not using it, freed up $2 million someplace else in the governor's budget, at least, to spend elsewhere on the lottery dollars. It basically, because there's a set amount of debt service that you have to pay, and that has to be paid first. Mm-hmm. So because we didn't have $2 million in debt service, you could assume that that $2 million was used to be distributed for some other purpose, most likely in the economic development arena. Does that help answer the question, or did I confuse you even further?
I just want to clarify that money that was set aside specifically for that now is back into the pot, and somebody else can use it for something else.
Co-chairs, Representative Whitsett, correct. It was freed up, put back into the pot, and so it was used in governor's budget somewhere. I don't know where. But that means that there's $2 million of debt service you're not paying, so that's $2 million of discretionary lottery funds that became available to be utilized. So, yeah, that $2 million is available to the legislature and within the co-chair's budget to spend how the co-chairs decide to do so.
Okay. Good. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have some questions. So, Ms. Dyster, maybe you know, on the suicide hotline, is the Oregon Health Authority going to contribute any money to that, or is it just the $350,000 from the, or $350,000 from the veterans?
Co-chairs and Representative Nierman, they also have a contract for Crisis Line, not specifically for veterans per se, but it's for anyone in crisis, anyone who might be suicidal, or there's also a gambling addiction hotline. So they bundle those services. There may be separate numbers that you call depending on what constituency you are, if you will, but they are contributing for their share. It's my understanding is the thought is that it would be the same provider who answers the phones, but the dollars would be a combination of dollars from ODBA and OHA.
Good. Who is the provider for that? Do you know? Is it OHA, or do they have a third-party provider?
They contract in the current biennium. I don't know if they're still called this Lines for Life. Was the contractors. Mm-hmm. So I see heads nodding in the back. Okay. So
then on the retirement home, you had 5 full-time equivalents there. Were those intended to be permanent positions? What are those for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, those 5 positions are you looking at the overall veterans home program? Those 5 positions are permanent positions within the department that stay there all the time.
They manage the facility then?
4 of them, and then we are adding the one, we are adding the Aging Veteran Services Director to bring the total to 5, and those are all assumed to be permanent, ongoing, full-time positions.
Good, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Madam Co-Chair, you have anything to say at this point?
I do. I would like, and I want to just say for colleagues on the panel that when one deviates from the co-chair's recommendation or the LFO recommendation, one curtsies to the co-chairs ahead of time, and so I'm not going rogue on you. This has been discussed. I would move the LFO recommendation to SB 5539 with a modification. And the modification in my motion is to add 0.5 FTE to the LFO recommendation and $50,000 general fund for the training position to bring that training position up to a full-time position. And the reason that I'm suggesting doing this is that when Representative Evans was here, he was talking about getting maximum bang for the buck. And I think that now that we have made the County Veterans Service Officers funding in the base budget for the department, we have to have adequately trained people. This is high-intensity training to be able to maximize the federal benefit. And I recall from the testimony, I don't recall the exact numbers, but the ROI on having these veterans officers highly trained results in much more federal money flowing back to the state of Oregon. I am proposing to modify the LFO recommendation to take that money from one of the emergency assistance programs in Package 101. So it would be $50,000 total. That would bring the training position up to a full-time equivalent position. It leaves money in the emergency assistance program, and in my considered opinion, it gives us a more intense training position to help keep those county veteran service officers at their absolute top of the game, thereby maximizing benefits for individual veterans and bringing additional money back to the state of Oregon. So I would respectfully modify the LFO recommendation with that 0.5 FTE, $50,000 general fund from the emergency assistance in Package 101, and the increase then would be from 0.5 to 1.0.
Very good. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there?
I was just going to ask: have you, Senator Johnson? Have you been in contact with the director, and can he effectively use that extra FTE?
I have been, and you're damn right he can.
I figured that.
Any other questions or and definitive answers? Yes, Representative Whitson.
I just kind of want to make a statement. I don't know if this is the right place for it, but I know several years ago. Klamath really wanted a new veterans home down there, and I did not understand that this money had been set aside in the co-chair's budget for that specific reason. We have the highest per capita of veterans in the state of Oregon, and I just, for the record, want to say that I'm a little disturbed that this money isn't going for what it was potentially intended for, building a veterans home or a match for it.
May I speak to that, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator.
Senator or Representative Whitson, the site of the third home was specified in legislation, so Klamath is not being deprived of the opportunity to compete for it.
Where was it?
It was in Roseburg, and that question was asked and answered a long time ago, and it was part of a political negotiation, to be blunt about it. And now it turns out that demand may not exist, and to free up the capacity makes more sense as the second one is coming online. But it is not as though Klamath is being deprived of an opportunity.
Okay, thank you. But Roseburg maybe or not?
Co-chairs Representative Whitsett, I think that statute remains on the books. To the extent that the timing becomes right, the demand is there for a third skilled nursing facility, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs will at that point then apply to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs for that Veterans Home Construction Grant and get that process underway.
Thank you. And I just want to follow up and say it isn't necessarily Klamath. I'm just concerned about the veterans who may not have one in close proximity to them. So just for the record, thank you.
All right. Thank you for those comments. Any other comments or questions to the motion with the modifications? Is there any objection? Hearing none, motion passes.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, before Ms. Dyster takes up performance measures, I need to excuse myself. I am AWOL from another meeting.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay, so the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation on key performance measures. You should have the key performance measure report in your meeting materials. We're recommending that KPM2, disability compensation, and KPM3, recovery of new federal dollars, be deleted. Those are the existing ones, and be replaced with new measures. With a new KPM3, Veteran Services, Disability Compensation, and Pension Benefits. It's reworded and will be a more comprehensive measure of how Oregon veterans compare with the average amounts of federal benefits received by veterans nationwide. So it's a little bit better metric, if you will. In addition, LFO is recommending new key performance measures relating to the loan program. You can see a new proposed KPM 1B there, and a new KPM 2B for maintaining below market private pay rates, and also a new KPM 4, which would measure the number of new power of attorneys granted to better measure performance in these particular service areas.
So are we ready for
a motion on the key performance measures?
All right.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Yes, I would move LFO recommendation on the key performance measures.
All right. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there any comments or questions? Is there any objection? Motion carries.
Okay. As I mentioned, as we were going through the LFO recommendation, we are proposing a budget note to read as follows. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs shall coordinate with the Oregon Health Authority to establish a Veterans Crisis Suicide Line that offers free anonymous assistance 24 hours a day to active duty service members, veterans, and their families to avoid duplication of services, and in order to provide delivery of the most efficient services. Coordination should ensure that the contract for suicide crisis intervention services is with a provider that has contractual affiliation with the National Suicide Prevention Line and the National Veterans Crisis Line. Specific statistical information should be maintained associated with services delivered to veterans.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Move LFO recommendation with respect to the budget note.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, any questions or comments? Any objection? Motion carries.
Okay. So the Legislative Fiscal Office recommended changes to the appropriation bill. The recommendation by Senator Johnson, the amendment did not change the amounts because we're basically moving money from one section to another, but it did change the total FTE amount. So the amendments to the budget bill that you see before you, the amendments to Senate Bill 5539, the amounts are still going to be as they read there. So the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending a budget of $11,697,348 general fund, $82,257,619 other funds, $1 federal funds, and $318,333,710 other funds non-limited, and 86 positions, 86.00 FTE, and that Senate Bill 5539 be amended accordingly.
Is that dash one?
That would be the dash one amendments.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move the dash one amendments as recommended by LFO.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Any comments or questions? Any objection? Motion carries.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Please.
I would move Senate Bill 5539 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion that we send 5539 as amended to the full committee with a due pass amended recommendation. Any comments or questions? Any objection? Motion carries. And I just wanted to note for the record that Senator Johnson was excused on the latter series of votes, and Representative Reed was excused on the very first one. And we need carriers to the full committee and to the second chamber. Senator Monroe?
I'd be happy to carry it and to the Senate.
All right, so Senator Monroe will take care of that. And I will take it to the House unless anybody else is interested. Going.
I wish if I was a veteran, we don't have a veteran among us here.
I think we should ask Representative Evans to carry this to the floor.
I think he would be proud to do that.
All right, let's make that happen.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay. All right. Anything else on 5539? If not, I will close the work session, and we will return to the public hearing on 2840. And Mr. Smith, I have you on the list to testify. And colleagues, I'll just indicate that we had opened this hearing briefly at the beginning of the hearing so Representative Evans could testify for us, and then we closed that and went to the work session, and now we were back on 2840. Welcome, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and just want to testify briefly on behalf of House Bill 2840. GI Bill since 1945 has probably been one of the most successful government programs of all time in terms of establishing the middle class, getting an education for returning veterans, and establishing them on their continuing to serve once they got home. We are now fortunate to have an even more generous post-9/11 GI Bill for currently serving service members and most recent veterans. Over 12,000 veterans in Oregon using the GI Bill works out to about $142 million, which includes some voc rehab in addition to the GI Bill being spent at community colleges and universities in Oregon. While it is a robust benefit, we have seen challenges in the timing of the payment of GI Bill and aligning those with the actual payments to the universities. The institutions get a piece of that in terms of tuition direct from the federal VA, and then the veterans also get a direct housing allowance and wraparound benefits that is paid directly to themselves. While we have worked with the community colleges and universities, knowing that the federal VA is good for those dollars when it lines up and the programs are eligible, where it has been more of a hurdle is on those individual housing and allowance benefits. We do have an educational grant program that has been in existence since 1945. Out of the budget here, we've shifted those into some higher value areas, given that the benefit was maxed out at $150 per month and not a huge difference in getting veterans into a school and through school. But want to make sure we are hesitant to get into the business of the way the bill is structured, it's a short-term, three-month loan to be paid back by the veteran. We would want clear guidance that we would be able to do it as a grant program. Given the limited assets of many of our student veterans, we do not want to be in the business of not foreclosing, but the collections process after that 3 months. So we'd look to the flexibility of a grant offering, and happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Smith? Yes, Senator.
Just now, Ms. Smith, I'm not sure on that. So you would make a loan, but if they didn't pay it back, it would turn into a grant?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, members of the committee, we would prefer it to be a grant program straight out and not a loan program in terms of how to be structured.
Looks like you're formulating a follow-up.
Yeah, okay, you prefer that, but if it's a loan program, it doesn't turn into a grant program once the loan is made? I'm not sure you answered my question. If they're default the loan, does it turn into a grant?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, the way the bill is currently structured, there's no mention of grant, and we would be in a collection process on the original loan. That's the situation we're ideally not wanting to get into the business of, given the limited assets of student veterans. The way we have structured educational aid historically has been a direct grant program, and we think it would be a stronger effort. Specifically also on the fiscal that we've submitted, embedded in that is that collection process and the tracking and accounting of a loan program. It would be a simpler, easier bill to implement, less of a fiscal in terms of staff impact, more money out the door to actually veterans if we structured it as a grant program.
Follow up?
Well, maybe to the chair, if it it currently, as proposed, is a loan program.
That's correct.
D-
do we have any work being done to make it a grant program? Are there any? I mean, I understand they prefer that, but we don't have a lot of time left in this session.
Well, this is a hearing, not a work session, so we're not closing on this today. Ms. Deister, have you seen any potential amendments?
I have not, but that doesn't mean that people in the building are not working on them.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Smith, let me pursue that a little bit further, if I may. I'm looking at a report issued by LFO on delinquent accounts in different state agencies from last year, and I'm seeing in your agency they're listing about $2,400,000 in delinquent accounts. Could you speak to that in general terms? What kind of money is owed to you, and what's being done about it?
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, I assume it's out of our home loan program. In terms of our foreclosure rate, it's significant below the private sector foreclosure rate. It's an option of last resort. And given our long experience since 1945 in the home loan program, we've been able to work very closely with our veteran borrowers and their families to keep them in their home. But always there are challenges when we do actually have to take possession of the property or have that back mortgage owed to the agency.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. When I was on the Mount Hood Community College Board recently, I learned that a lot of veterans were not matriculating because they had to have the money up front for the first term, for the first term's tuition, and they didn't have it, even though they would be reimbursed by the GI Bill once they completed a term. And so what we did as a board at Mount Hood Community College was grant incoming veterans the first term's tuition, and then of course they could serve out that term, collect the money from the GI Bill, use the money to pay for the next term. It tripled the number of GIs, the number of returning veterans that were matriculating at Mount Hood Community College. I'd like to see a similar program for all of our public institutions.
Thank you. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't help but resist sharing a quote that I encountered recently on the GI Bill as a result of a conversation on another proposal around Free Community College. I ran across what one critic said about the GI Bill at the time. It was Robert Maynard Hutchins, who was the president of the University of Chicago and a real critic. Maybe it's just the timely language that caught me, but he was a big critic and said colleges and universities will find themselves converted into educational hobo jungles. It's nice to hear the story of what it's done, and I hope we're going to take some lessons from this into other areas of policy before us.
There you go. All right. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Anybody else here to testify on 2840? If not, I will go ahead and close the public hearing. And Ms. Deister, anything that you've got to share with us?
Mr. Co-Chair and members, I would say please watch your email and please watch the schedule. We are, of course, moving to different notice requirements. We try to do everything with at least 24 hours notice, but things are in flux. There may be things added in the later part of the week, if at all possible, so as they're cleared and ready to go. So, and as always, don't hesitate to give us a call if you've got questions.
Well, if I could just emphasize that a little bit. We're seeing some changes on a daily basis. Some things that were posted earlier are being held back for some further review. Other things are being moved around. We're getting some bills to fill the gaps, so we have make sure we have enough time to address those bills. So ask your staff to check in the morning and maybe check again at lunchtime to make sure that you're not needed here for a work session, or that there's a bill that you've got some particular interest that'll be before us. And that being said, nobody else has anything else, I'm prepared to adjourn the committee. Thank you all. Committee. Thank you all.